Evolutionary Radio. This is your host, Trevor Caritzen. Joining me, as always, is my loyal and faithful co-host, Steve Smee.
Yes, and joining us also is the Mason, Masonic bodybuilder.
How's ready going? For another beautiful show we got planned for today.
Beautiful show. It's beginning of August. 1 month till back to school, back to work, back to the regular routine. It's crazy that summer's almost gone. You guys got any summer vacations planned left for August, or kind of just wait until September when everything's back to full swing?
I have vacation time. What the hell is that? I don't take vacations. I mean, I'm trying to get filthy rich, man. I'm almost 40. I'm trying to get filthy rich so I can retire to my boat in the Keys and just go fishing all day. So no vacations for me. How about you, Matt?
Yeah, I got one left. Actually, one full week left coming up in a couple weeks. And then this weekend, we're just taking a couple days to take the kids away to an amusement park from kind of where I grew up. So that'll be fun.
Well, September basically marks, back to work, back to school. It also marks fall fashion. A lot of people right now are back to school shopping, buying suits, buying some business clothes for back to work. I actually just had a modeling job. And basically end of August, early September, that's when all the runways are. And that's when, all the big designers actually make all their money. That and Black Friday is the real shopping season. So I was just going to talk a little bit about, what's in this season and some tips on how to dress. Because this is something I see a lot of guys make a big mistake on. So the last couple of years, what's really been hot and trending has been bright colors. I'm sure you guys have seen, at the gym, people wearing like neon yellow spandex and things like that. That's out. This season, everything's really dark. It's shades, grays, your blacks, things like that. One thing I was just modeling, it was like black denim, but they were pretty nice denim. It was almost like a black dress pant type thing. A black sweater, and then a gray cardigan. So things like that, that's kind of the look everyone's going for this season. So I'll give some suggestions on, if you have a bit of a gut and you're looking for some back to work clothes, one of the best things you can do is tuck in your shirt. Because when you tuck in your shirt, people are going to see your belt and it's not going to make your waist look as big. But when you have that, when you have an untucked dress shirt, it basically hangs off your gut. People notice your gut way more. Do you guys, Matt, do you ever have to wear like a dress shirt for work? I know Steve's always in a dress shirt.
Every single day. I'm tucked in every day too.
Yeah. And the suit was actually designed to cover up a man's belly. So I'm sure you guys have seen that, like a guy in a suit, he looks really good. And then he takes his suit jacket off and you're like, whoa, I didn't think this guy has a gut. So men, if you have a bit of a beer belly, invest in a good blazer. It can literally take like 30 to 40 pounds off your look.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So say I'm the guy that I did really well on my summer cut. I'm looking good right now. What can I do to accentuate the muscles that I have, the cuts that I have? What can I do if I'm the opposite of the guy with the gut to really show off what I have while having to cover up?
One of the best things you can do is a V-neck. A V-neck, obviously, it shows your jawline. It shows your chest muscles. You can even get a really deep V-neck. That's really going to show, your upper chest. One thing that actually looks really good is if you have, a black dress pant, a black V-neck, and then a blazer over top. It's kind of like a business casual look. Another thing is, golf polos, you can just undo the buttons. Like, you don't want to look like a man whore, but if you undo the top two buttons, you can really see that pronounced jawline. And, a lot of golf polos now, like especially the Nike golf polos, they're pretty form-fitting and they have a shorter sleeve. So you can see, the muscles, you can see the vascularity, things like that. Under Armour makes some really good form-fitting hitting golf polos too. So that's some suggestions. And then pants.
Who determines what's in style and what isn't? Is it someone who's in charge of that? I don't even get it.
That's kind of like asking like who's in charge of the economy being up or down. You know, like the most popular designers, like the biggest names, kind of will lead the way, and then everyone follows suit. It's kind of like the biggest companies.
Like who? Can you be more specific? Like who? Like you're talking about the big retail companies?
No, you're talking like the Michael Kors. You're talking like the Louis Vuitton, the Prada, the Gucci. You know, they basically set what's hot. And then, you know, all the smaller companies like Tommy Hilfiger, they kind of copy it.
But they probably know what is hot. They don't just like invent it. They probably
know. It's cyclical, right? Like, it goes from fat tie to skinny tie to fat tie to skinny tie. It's like same with haircuts, you know, like haircuts kind of change, like long hairs in and then short hairs in and long hairs in and short hairs in. They basically change it every season so that people have to go buy new clothes.
That's, so they change it once a year or they change it what? Like every few years?
They change it slightly every year, but it's a big change every 2 to 3 years. It's kind of like cars, you know, like every 2 to 3 years, they'll really change the model of like a Toyota Camry or anything like that. But there's slight changes every single year just so that people are forced to, you know, buy new clothes.
Mm-hmm. And in the black look, you don't think that's too like gothic?
Like, that is in. It's not just black though. It's just shades. So it's not really colors. It's more like whites, grays, blacks. If you notice the last couple of years, everything was very floral. It was very bright. It was very like neon. They're going away from that and everything's going back now to more like traditional shades. Like if you wanted to wear a blue, you could do that. It just wouldn't be like, you know, like a bright baby blue. It'd be more like a dark navy, things like that.
I love Lily.
Is that purple? Lily?
I don't know. I don't know for women, like Lily, it's like, I don't know if you know that company, but wow, they make some nice stuff for women, like cute dresses and stuff.
I think that's only in the States. Have you ever heard of Lily, Matt?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I don't think we have that here in the States. Lily, hey, is that like dress wear or is that like athletic wear?
I don't know, but it's like cute dresses. It's like really, it's like very bright. And
is that where your girlfriend shops?
I don't think it's a store. I think it's just the name of the designer, Lily. Yeah,
I've never heard of it. It's not high fashion. That's all I know.
I don't know much about that stuff. That's your area.
So anyways, just hopefully that helps. So if you have a bit of a beer belly that, you know, you're trying to hide, tuck in your shirt and invest in a good blazer. Another thing is don't wear too tight pants because you can really see, you know, you can see that you've got a big butt. Whereas, you know, if you're that guy who just got off a cut, you know, get some tighter pants. Like they don't have to be skinny jeans, but, you know, get some pants that are going to show off, you know, your butt, your leg definition, things like that. So our first listener question, and this is a question that, you know, I'll let Steve tackle because he's the expert. Hey, Trev, Matt, and Steve, love the show. I was wondering if you could explain what exactly DHT is. I hear all about it and how it affects hair loss, but what exactly is it? Thanks for the help.
Well, I guess, you know, to sum it up, you know, when we're basically fetuses or whatever, DHT is what gives us penises. It's dihydrotestosterone. So that's what DHT stands for. So it's our androgen sex hormone. Basically, testosterone does convert to DHT in the body. And as we, you know, get older, the DHT causes our prostates to get enlarged. It causes us to lose our head hair, stuff like that. When you use steroids, that increases it as well. That's why you see all these Mr. Olympia guys or these YouTube gurus who are claiming natty. They're all bald. Well, I mean, that's kind of proof that they're juicing pretty heavily. So the more you juice as you get older, the more, you know, head hair loss you're going to lose that for that reason. And also your prostate is going to get enlarged. So, you know, what you see, like, you know, you see, you have these DHT blockers out there. Transsexuals, they'll use DHT blockers because they want to reduce DHT in their body because they're trying to, you know, basically transsex from a male to a female. So they'll use DHT blockers to get that DHT block and estrogen. So that'll make them, you know, more female-like. So, you know, that pretty much sums up DHT, but DHT is a very, very important sex hormone. Without DHT, you know, your libido is going to crash. You're not going to be as aggressive. There's so many necessary things about DHT that makes us men. So it's a very, very important hormone. And, you know, I highly recommend that you don't fear it, but at the same time, if it gets out of control, you may have issues with enlarged prostate and start losing your head hair. So I'm actually like starting to lose my head hair as I get older. And so it is kind of affecting me as well. So even though I don't like abuse steroids, obviously I have a lot of hair, but you know, it's still, as you get older, your DHT levels are going to add up over time. So it's going to start shedding your head hair. So you really want to not abuse steroids for that reason.
So Steve, this is something we've kind of talked on and off about. We kind of have different viewpoints on it. So DHT is important for muscle gains. It's important to, you know, be a man, essentially. There is a drug you can take called finasteride, which basically prevents testosterone from converting into DHT. So as great as, you know, DHT is for all those things, it also does cause side effects like hair loss, and it does affect your prostate. So a lot of people who are concerned about hair loss will take finasteride. It's something I used. I recently stopped using it because I'm not experiencing any hair loss, but it does work. So Steve, if you start really losing your hair, do you think you'll ever use finasteride, or are you just going to kind of accept the hair loss?
I think genetically I'm not at risk of it, but I don't abuse steroids either. So I'm going to say no on that because, you know, a lot of the things that we need DHT for, I don't want to lose that. And I know Matt can chime in because Matt did use finasteride and he started noticing some major issues. I've never used it. I would be scared to use it. To me, it's not worth it because, you know, to lose libido and lose sex drive and lose those man-like, you know, strength and stuff, to me, it's not worth keeping some hair. So what happened with you, Matt, when you tried it?
Yeah, honestly, I started to get, and it kind of came out of nowhere. Libido went to shit. I started, like, I had no morning wood at all. And I couldn't figure out why. It seemed really weird. So then I was reading up on it and I thought, you know what? Maybe this is the culprit. And I was using such a low dose. So I was really surprised. I was using like 1 milligram per day, but I stopped it and everything went back to normal. If you do research this, things like finasteride, it's not very common that you'll get those side effects really bad like I did. So it's one of those things, understand the risk, but for most people, like Trevor didn't have this issue, for most people, you're going to be just fine if you use it. So it's just about understanding it. DHT really is an interesting thing because there's still a lot of unknown about DHT. If you actually look, like research it, there's a lot that we don't know, especially in women. So in men, as Steve said, when we're developing, it's what's going to cause us to grow a penis to, you know, be a man. So what can happen is if you're supposed to be a man genetically and you're lacking DHT, that's when you can grow and you can come out and be born to where you're not really developed either sex. So you hear about that. That's DHT plays a very important role in that. And it can be the same thing for women. It's a lot more serious in a man, if you're born obviously with really, really low DHT for whatever reason. In women, if you're born with low DHT, it's not really going to cause any problems. For women, if you're born with extremely high DHT, it's not really too bad for most people. What it can cause in women with high DHT is maybe some more facial hair and those kind of characteristics. But what they're really researching now is they're finding that DHT plays an important role in what age each person starts puberty, because that's a very different thing. 16, it's such a different thing. So it's a very interesting compound. If you guys, you know, do some research on it. I know we always talk about DHT derivatives. You know, we'll talk about Anavar and Winstrol and Primo and things like that, but we don't talk about, you know, what the actual hormone is in the body. So it's worth looking up, guys. There's tons of articles out there on
it. And another thing that's interesting about DHT and finasteride is you hear such different viewpoints. Like, a lot of doctors are actually prescribing it now to men in their, you know, late 30s, early 40s as a preventive measure to developing prostate cancer. So, I mean, some doctors are prescribing it to people who don't even care about hair loss, you know, who aren't even using, you know, steroids. They're saying, hey, you know, this is a great drug to prevent prostate cancer. Whereas, you know, I have other people, like Steve was saying, you know, they're experiencing crazy side effects. So it's something you really have to do your research on. I used finasteride for multiple years. I came off it. I really noticed no difference either way. I guess I was one of those lucky people who didn't get any side effects. So if hair loss is something that concerns you, do your research on finasteride. The best three-prong approach you can take to hair loss, preventing hair loss, is finasteride, 1 milligram a day. Again, that one, you know, it's kind of controversial, so do your research on before just hopping on that one. Rogaine, which is actually the drug minoxidil. If you're a Costco member, you can get the Costco brand minoxidil spray. It's like a tenth of the cost of brand name Rogaine. That's a topical product. There's going to be no side effects associated with that. And then a good anti-hair loss shampoo. I personally use the one. It's called N2 Shampoo from NeedToBuildMuscle.com. If you do those three, that's pretty much your three best preventive tips you can do to prevent hair loss when on a steroid cycle. If you're worried about finasteride, you can just do the last two. But that's basically the best preventive approach you can take. If you are worried about hair loss from steroids, you want to be using these before hair loss side effects start. Once the hair is gone, it's already gone. So, I mean, if you're about to do a cycle, you're really worried about your hair loss, start all three of those on the first day of your cycle and use it throughout your entire cycle in PCT.
I just want to add too, Trevor, you know this, but Matt, you know this as well, but a lot of guys don't, and they learn this the hard way. If you're running a DHT derivative, it's not going to prevent DHT from rising in your body. What prevents DHT from rising in your body with regards to anabolic steroids is using, you know, testosterone derivatives. Like, for example, if you use testosterone or EQ or, you know, Tren or any of these things, they'll metabolize into DHT. So finasteride would work at blocking DHT from rising. But if you're using something like Winstrol or Masterone, they're straight up DHT derivatives, so they're not going to prevent shit. So a lot of these guys who are bald, like on YouTube, they can run all the finasteride they want. They're not gonna save their hair because they've been abusing, you know, these DHT derivatives for years. So these orals.
That's a really good point. So basically, what finasteride does is it prevents the hormone from converting to DHT. But when you're taking a DHT derivative, since it's already a DHT derivative, it doesn't need to convert. So finasteride will do nothing. So if you're using any DHT derivative, finasteride won't prevent hair loss in any way. And that's a really good point, because I'd say Winstrol is probably the worst steroid for hair loss. So, I mean, finasteride won't do anything. So the only thing you really have in your arsenal then is Rogaine and the good anti-hair loss shampoo, like N2 shampoo. Let's get on to our next question. Hey, Evolutionary Radio, love the show. Just finished my first steroid cycle and I'm about to start my PCT. I was wondering what training and diet changes you recommend going from on cycle into PCT. Matt, do you want to start off with this one and then we'll let Steve go and then I'll finish up?
Yeah, I think it highly depends on your goals, but I wouldn't be eating the same amount of calories probably. I'd probably cut it back a bit, and your training, you can try to stay the same, but what you're going to notice is you may need an extra off day because you're not going to have that recovery that the cycle was giving you. for the calorie, like if you were in a bulk, you might want to go down to maintenance calories, you know, and continue on. If you were cutting, you're going to want to probably stay in that deficit just so you don't have, I'll call it a rebound. You don't want to have that where you're just going to start piling on fat and then, you know, you feel like shit and then you stop training and then that's when everybody loses their gains, right? Then you go to crap. Going into PCT is arguably the most important timing or time of your cycle because you lose that extra edge you had, right? You lose that benefit. So it is not the time to slack off. It's very, very common that guys will slack off on their diet or their training just because mentally they're not on anymore, right? They don't feel that, you know, that they're just ready to kill it every day. And when you combine that with other factors, that's when you can lose gains and, you know, you just don't feel good in PCT. So on top of doing a proper PCT, you need to continue training as hard as you were before, if not harder, and you need to lock in your diet right down, you know, to the exact macros you need even more, because it's just going to be that much more important to have everything dialed in as you're coming off and your hormones are trying to reset back to normal and your body's kind of fluctuating.
I mean, I'll chime in, I guess, on this. Listen, guys, I mean, this goes back to, you know, what I've been preaching for years when it comes to steroid use. You got to have a base, you know, because you're going to use steroids after you've only been training a short amount of time. You're going to feel great on it. Your strength's going to go up. It's going to be easier to build muscle, yada, yada, yada. Then you're going to come off and you feel like shit. You're going to be like, man, this sucks. Well, if you've never trained naturally, you're not going to know how to train when you're off. But in my experience, I mean, if you spend most of your time off of steroids, you should have no problems when you come off. You'll know exactly what to do. You'll know exactly how much to push your body. You'll know exactly what to do with your diet. You may want to increase your calories even when you come off steroids. You might not necessarily want to drop them. If you're a skinnier guy that, you know, struggles with appetite and struggles to gain weight, you know, steroids are going to help increase your appetite. Most steroids do. So when you come off, you know, I know when I originally started using steroids, I was more, you know, bulk, let's gain weight. So when I would come off, I actually would raise my calories because those steroids weren't, you know, giving me that, you know, advantage of that nutrition partitioning anymore. So I would have to raise my calories to keep my strength, to keep my mass, or I would, you know, quickly lose weight again. So, you know, it boils down to, you know, you got to build a proper base. You got to have your diet on point. You got to have your training on point beforehand. And then this way, when you come off, you're not going to be clueless what to do. And then you're not going to end up like a lot of these guys who just stay on steroids year round. And that's what we see all the time. Steroids are easy to get. I mean, it's as easy to get as ordering something off Amazon. It's cheap. It's not expensive. I mean, these days, you know, mommy, daddy, and grandma probably gives you thousands of dollars for Christmas. I mean, we spoil kids these days. We give them money and stuff. So they have money to spend on this shit. So it's like all you guys in your 20s who are hopping on steroids, you're not going to get it. You're not going to understand what it's like to train naturally. So yeah, when you come off, it's going to suck for you and you're going to be tempted just to jump back on cycles. So it's important. Until you figure out how to eat when you're off steroids, you're going to struggle coming off during PCT always. So you really got to dial that shit in.
So let's like really take it back to the basics and let's think about what do steroids do? Steroids signal protein synthesis. So what does that mean? It means you can utilize higher protein in your diet and it means you can recover faster. So on cycle, you know, you can eat slightly more protein. You can recover a little bit faster. So, you know, you can work out a little bit more. But I mean, it really doesn't make that much of a difference. Like, as Steve said, you know, like the difference between your diet, your training, on cycle versus off cycle, it's really not that different. You know, so on cycle, you can increase your protein a little bit because, you know, you have a higher protein synthesis. You know, you can train a little bit more frequently, but besides that, you know, I pretty much keep everything the same. So let's say on cycle, you're doing 2 grams of protein per pound of body weight. Off cycle, I'd maybe do 1.5 grams. So you can lower your calories just by eating a little bit less protein. And then on cycle, let's say you're training 6 days a week, I'd maybe bump that down to 5 days per week, or you could keep training 6 days per week, but, you know, maybe reduce the length of your workouts by maybe about 20%. But not much should really change. You know, what put the muscle on in the first place is what's going to keep it there. And, you know, we always see these guys, you know, who they, you know, do a cycle and they get great results, but they don't keep any of it because after their cycle, they don't run a proper PCT. They don't keep training and they don't keep eating like a bodybuilder. So, I mean, what put the muscle there in the first place is going to keep it there. That's hard training and a high protein diet. And, you know, we're just talking about protein, but also you need lots of ample, good quality carbs, healthy fats, fruits and vegetables, things like that. So the next two topics are topics that I've been discussing with just clients of mine. And they asked me to bring up on this show to get, you know, Steve and Matt's point of view. So the first one is the idea that, you know, the most effective steroid stacks are stacking steroids that don't bind well to the androgen receptor with steroids that do bind well to the androgen receptor. Because the thought process is that if you stack two steroids that bind really well to the androgen receptor together, one is going to have greater affinity and it's going to take up all those spots. And the other steroid that does bind very well to the androgen receptor, but, you know, all the spots are kind of taken up, it's going to start aromatizing and cause side effects. So, you know, Winstrol, for example, doesn't bind very well to the androgen receptor. So stacking that with something like Tren would be a really good cycle. Whereas, you know, stacking something that binds well to the androgen receptor like Test with Tren, you know, both of those bind very well to the androgen receptor. The speculation was because Tren has such a high affinity for the androgen receptor, a lot of that testosterone wouldn't bind and would then aromatize into estrogen. So I was wondering, Steve, what are your thoughts on this? Do you think this is any truth to this? Do you think that, you know, that would only really be true if you're using like absurd dosages? It's something like there's no right or wrong answer. It's just a topic for conversation.
Gosh, Trevor, I mean, I don't know, man. There's so much like gray area to this question. Like in my experience, I found, like if I'm running, like say Tren, if I were to run a cycle of Tren, come off, run another cycle of Tren, come off, run another cycle of Tren, come off, run another cycle of Tren, come off. Cause I've done that. I've run like 4 or 5 straight cycles of Tren. I've noticed like I get less results as I run it. But then if I come off Tren for like a year or two and then run it again, it's like, bam, the androgens hit me hard. So, I mean, I don't know. Is that the body? Is it psychological? Is it have to do the receptors? I really don't have a clear-cut answer to that. And I'm not sure if, you know, we'll ever find that out. But I think maybe I found like as you get older, you tend to have less of an effect from androgens. Like you tend to mature, the androgens don't hit you as hard. You tend to just have less aggression as a whole. You tend to, you know, mentally mature. So I think all that maybe has something to do with it. It's a little strange. It's a little strange, but I'm curious to hear more about that, like from a scientific standpoint. I just don't know if there's, you know, any way that you can say yes or no to that question. I think it's just in my experience, as I've gotten older, androgens tend to hit me less. And also the longer I'm off something androgenic like Tren and then go back on it, the more it'll hit me. So I do think there's some type of physical and mental adjustment that we make, you know, in our bodies, but I don't have any evidence of that. I can just tell you from, you know, personal experience.
The problem we have, Steve, is that if you look at all the limited number of human studies done with steroids, done with SARMs, done with performance enhancing drugs, the dosages aren't anywhere near what bodybuilders are using. You know, if you look at Ostarine, for example, most of the literature done with Ostrin on humans, they used a dosage of 2 to 5 milligrams per day. You know, most people are running 20 to 5 to 50 milligrams per day. So, I mean, you really, once you start interpolating data like that, like it really kind of bastardizes it. So what I'm thinking, you know, is Ostrin, for example, binds really, really well to the androgen receptor, right? So let's say someone's doing a testosterone cycle and, you know, using Ostrin with that, I think they'd be at a greater risk for getting gyno because so much of that Ostrin would be binding to the androgen receptor. That's more of the testosterone be aromatizing to estrogen. It would be really interesting. And, you know, anyone listening, you know, if you do this, I'd love to see your blood work, is run a testosterone only cycle of, let's say, 500 milligrams per week with Odin AI, see where your estrogen's at, and then do that same cycle again while taking Ostrin or something like that, something that won't affect testosterone or estrogen levels, but then see if your estrogen levels are higher because less of that testosterone is binding to the androgen receptor. And this kind of makes sense because I have lots and lots of clients, right? I often recommend SARMs to them. And the people who generally like the SARMs the most are the people who aren't using steroids at all or are just using like a very low dose testosterone replacement therapy. So I think that there has to be some sort of competition between, you know, two steroids that both bind to the androgen receptor on which one binds more readily. Matt, what are your thoughts on this?
You gotta unmute, Matt. Unmute.
Sorry, guys. For years, we've heard about this discussion on the forums, right? Whether different compounds compete for the receptor and is it worth using both or not? Because, you know, like, are you just gonna waste one? So scientifically, like, I guess just from the outside, it makes sense because you only have a certain amount of receptors. So, you know, you can only have so much hook on to that, right? So I guess if you take the test and trend example, I would think if you ran a gram of each, you're going to have a lot more side effects than if you ran 200 milligrams of test and 500 milligrams trend, right? And I think the trend, you have to decide, I think, which compound you want to do the work. If you're using two that are going to, you know, be more likely to compete for that receptor. So I think kind of what Steve said, as you get older and you mature a bit, you're, I think, able to make that decision a little more. So if you're going to run something like test, trend, and EQ, you know, kind of think about what compound you want to do the work and what you kind of want to be the secondary. And I would probably set up my doses like that. But I think that this really is an interesting discussion. And I think if somebody's willing to do this and, you know, run blood work, I think it would be a great, great asset because there's just not studies in humans on the dosages we use for the purpose we use. It's just not out there. Recently, I had somebody do a test for me on the SARM LGD. I had another guy tell me that his cholesterol levels were up from running LGD. And I said, well, that's interesting. And so I had somebody else run it. And sure enough, he had the same thing. So this is kind of the way we learn about these compounds. We really need people that are going to use them responsibly and get blood work done. And I think that'll really, you know, start to teach us a lot because I think this is a very interesting.
Steve, off the top of your head, do you know which steroids don't bind to the androgen receptor very well? I know Winstrol and Dianabol don't. Do you know if there's any other ones?
I mean, I guess Primo. I don't know, like, scientifically, but I would think Primo because I ran Primo by itself. And it was really like lacking any type of androgenic kick to it. So, but I know like with Primo, like a lot of HIV patients were run it solo, like overseas because of its immune system benefits. So they'll kind of like prevent muscle wasting with it, but I'm not quite sure.
If anyone's interested, I can do some more research and pull up some PubMed articles. what's interesting though is it's not necessarily just the androgenic properties, because like Anavar is primarily an anabolic steroid, like it has very, very low androgenic ratings, but it actually binds, it has a pretty high affinity for the androgen receptor. So it's one of those things where just because it's an anabolic doesn't mean that it doesn't bind very well to the androgen receptor.
I mean, hypothetically, if you were to really like dial this in, you could put together like the most ultimate steroid stacks where you wouldn't be wasting anything. But as it stands now, the way guys stack steroids, they stack 5, 6, 7 things. So it's kind of like just, you know, just a crapshoot, you know, and they end up getting gains from that. So, but you could really save people money if you were to really dial this in. But, you know, it's really hard to figure this one out. It's a riddle.
Well, even then, Steve, like this is where that whole DECA Winstrol stack came from, because DECA has a very high affinity for the androgen receptor, but Winstrol has a very low affinity for the androgen receptor, right? So people thought, hey, let's stack these two and it's going to be a perfect stack. But I mean, it doesn't really work, because DECA is great for bulking. Winstrol is really good at drying out physiques and it causes a lot of people joint pain. So even though, you know, you're getting that synergistic effect, Winstrol is not really doing your bulk any good, because you're not able to lift heavy because you got bad joint pain. So I think it's kind of one of those things that on paper it works, but in a real world sense, it doesn't work, because what are some of the most common stacks that, you know, guys have been using since the beginning of time to put on size? Test DECA D-ball, you know, test and trend, test and EQ. So it's an interesting topic for discussion, but I think it's kind of something that we're overthinking. So the next topic, one of my clients wanted to bring up is mistakes we see people make in the gym on a daily basis. This is interesting because, you know, all of us are in the gym pretty much every single day, and I'm sure we've seen some very, very weird stuff. So Matt, I'll let you go first, and then I'll let Steve, and then I'll go.
So maybe I'll go a little outside of the box here. What I see in my gym is too much cardio. If you look around your gym, and sometimes it's a little easier to notice on women than men, but if you just look around the gym in general, and you look at all the people that are on the treadmill and the elliptical and all the other cardio machines, look at them for a minute. And then look at the people that are lifting heavy weights and that are on, you know, that are in the squat rack and bench pressing and, you know, using some of the machines. And you notice a very, very difference in their physique. So a common mistake, I think, is people going to the gym because they want to lose weight. They want to get in shape. It's their New Year's resolution. It's, you know, whatever. This is what they want to do. They've decided to do it. And they think that all they need to do is cardio. And I think that's the number one mistake when it comes to fat loss. Obviously, diet is going to be your number one. To me, it's a lot easier to eat 200 calories less than to run on the treadmill for a half an hour. So that's number one. Number two is when you're lifting weights, you get a metabolic increase for 1, sometimes 2 days, depending on the person. So that burn stays with you as the muscles are, you know, repairing and healing and your body's going through that process. Where when you do cardio, when you're done, you're done. That's kind of it. Your heart rate goes back to normal. The burn is over. So if you're looking to maximize fat loss and cutting, ideally, you want to combine all three. You want to have a diet where you're in a deficit, 300 to 500 calories. You want to be weight training, and you want to do cardio. It's not just about the cardio. So that's, I think, is my number one mistake that I see.
Matt, one thing I'm going to jump in there. What you said about the cardio is 100% true, except for high-intensity interval training, which if you think about it, is almost like a form of weight training. Because if you think about it, like sprinting, that's almost like doing explosive squats, or if you're doing like max kettlebell swings for 20 seconds, like that's basically, you know, a squat and a hip thrust all in one. So what you said is 100% true. And that's why, you know, so much research has shown the benefits of high intensity interval training lately, is because you do get that post-exercise oxygen consumption. Whereas if you're just walking on a treadmill, yeah, once you're done, you're done.
I guess I'll go next. I think one of the biggest mistakes I see is fat people working their abs. Like, they spend half their gym time working their abs. And, you know, that's something, you know, having a gut that needs to be addressed in the kitchen, not in the gym. You know, when you come in the gym, you need to focus on breaking down muscle. You need to not focus on thinking that you could just do a bunch of ab crunches and your belly is going to go away, like spot training. So take care of that in the kitchen. Okay. Leave the gym for breaking that muscle. Poor form is a huge one. I see these younger guys and I see older guys too. It doesn't really matter the age, but I guess we just call them noobs. They'll usually be in, you know, sometimes they'll be in a group, you know, two, three guys, and they don't know what they're doing. They're just doing improper form. They have no method to their workouts. They'll do abs, then they'll go do bench press, then they'll go do pull downs, and they'll go do this. It's just wandering around the gym. They're taking like 10 minutes in between sets. There's no method to it. So, I mean, get a workout program, get a good workout program first. Get your diet dialed in first before you go to the gym. Have a plan to it. And then consistency. Don't just go to the gym once or twice a week and do a half-assed workout. You're not going to go anywhere. If you really want to succeed at this, you need to basically have a commitment to it. The people in the gym who are the serious lifters, I see them in the gym. Every time I go to the gym, I see them in the gym. They're in there around the same time I am. They have a pattern to the way they work out. They bust their ass. They're in there. It's all business. They do their shit. They leave. You know, they're not there to fuck around. So that's been the biggest mistakes. You're never going to see results if you just jerk off, you know, at the gym. You really have to go in there with a plan.
So building on what Steve said, one mistake I see a lot of guys make is trying to multitask. You know, they're trying to be on their phone, texting some cute girl or their girlfriend while working out. You can do one thing well, or you can do a lot of things subpar. You know, if you're training 60, 90 minutes, that text, that can wait. You know, unless your wife is a week out from giving birth and you know, you want to be on your phone at all times, or maybe you're a surgeon who's on call or something, keep your phone in your locker room. You know, you're going to get so much out of your workout, and your workout's going to be faster because you're not going to be wasting time. You know, like, it's just more efficient all around. It's just better. The main mistake I see people make, and this is especially new lifters, is that they're using way too many accessory, I don't even know what you call them. They're using wrist straps, they're using knee wraps, they're using belts, they're using gloves. Like I saw a guy today. He wasn't even squatting 135 pounds. He wasn't even squatting a full plate per side. And he was using knee wraps. He was using a belt. Like, it's totally unnecessary. Like, I don't use any of that stuff anymore. The only thing I use is gym chalk. And that's just because, you know, if I'm deadlifting heavy, I don't want to have slippery hands. Or if I'm doing like heavy overhead presses, I don't want to drop a dumbbell on my head because it slips out of my hand. I just use gym chalk. That's all I use. I don't use a belt. I don't use wrist straps. I don't use gloves. I don't use wrist wraps. I don't use knee wraps. I don't use any of that stuff. The problem with any of that stuff is it puts a band-aid on the problem. So let's say you have weak forearms and you're using wrist straps. Well, your forearms are just going to get even weaker because now you're not even training them at all. So you're better off just not using any of that stuff. So we have one more listener question. And this listener question was emailed to Steve, and it's a relationship question.
Yeah, we like to get in a little relationship question to end the show because it really helps us out. This guy wants to know, he says his wife went apeshit on him the other day. She just went berserk. He said something he shouldn't have. You know, he wants to know, how do I smooth shit over with my wife? So I guess this question is basically, you know, if you say something wrong, how do you smooth things over with your girlfriend or wife? You know, you know, Matt's going to be good at this because he's been married for, I think, 10 years. So he's probably had arguments with his wife. But I just want to say this. Women, you know, you got to be really careful what you say to women because they're going to remember everything. So you really, the best thing to do is keep your fucking mouth shut. Don't, like, say the wrong thing. But what I found the best worst thing you can do is go to bed upset at each other, because that can really cause a domino effect. You really have to, square things before bed. That cliche, never go to bed angry, that we hear, it's so fucking true. Because once you start doing that, you know, it balloons. And as guys, we tend to have egos. We tend to not want to say, I'm sorry. We tend to be like, I was right, you were wrong. So you really got to just kind of like apologize, even if you weren't wrong, and kind of just smooth things over. And, you don't want to go to bed with her pissed off at you. So I think just being open with her and kind of like letting her know that you love her and talking to her can really work wonders. And if it's something where, she's not, with you, she doesn't live with you or something, shooting an email, a nice long email, telling her how you feel about her, that you love her, that can really do wonders at smoothing things over. But remember, I mean, women have estrogen and they're going to get, they're going to lose their minds if you say the wrong thing to them. So you just got to be careful.
Yeah, I think there's a lot that goes into it. I'll bring a different perspective quickly. I know I've talked about my two kids on this show before. In reality, my wife and I have had four kids. We have two kids that passed away at different times. And that's something that really makes you realize shit happens. I will never go to bed and not say I love you, and not even if she's completely wrong and I did nothing wrong, I'm gonna try to make it right, because shit happens and you don't want to have it happen like that. You want to straighten it out, like Steve said. That's the most important thing. What I've learned is two things. Number one is the skill of listening. You guys may think you listen properly, but it took me until probably 8 years into a sales career and training to learn how to actively listen to what somebody's saying. Not just hear them, and while they're talking, I'm trying to think of my response. Actually listen to what they're saying. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is, guys, remember, women are more sensitive than we are. Things you say will hurt them, okay? Whether it's a comment that you don't think is that bad or whatever, you can hurt them a lot more than you think. And you need to own up to it, and you need to apologize when you're wrong. Because you know what? A lot of us, we tend to be more alpha, right? We're in the gym, we're training. Some of us are on cycles, we're more aggressive. You know what? Sometimes you got to man up and you got to apologize and say, you know what? Like, what are we talking about here? Let's deal with this. I was wrong. Whatever. I'm sorry. And you move on with it. The thing is with women too, I found, this is, I guess, with my wife, I can't speak for all women, but they do need time. So for me, I know anytime we get into an argument that's a bit heated, I always want to fix it right away. I always want to just talk and, let's figure it out, whatever. And sometimes she says, just give me a minute, just get away from me, go away. I don't want to see you. I don't want to hear you. And I've learned after way too many years of not listening that really does pay off. They need that time to cool down, and it will dial the intensity down, 100 notches. It'll go down. And then after a little while, she'll be able to talk to you, and then you can kind of work it out. But yeah, it's different. It's intense, but you got to listen, and you got to take responsibility, and you got to work at it together.
What Matt said about learning how to listen, 100%. And I think you only really learn that skill from being in sales. The last year of my engineering degree, I worked at a supplement store, and we worked off commission, and the owner, every week there was a challenge, whoever could sell the most of this particular brand of protein would get like $100 Visa gift card or anything like that. And I would never win. And the biggest problem I had is, someone would walk into the store and I would try to like talk to them about all the science and, I was trying to show how much knowledge I had. And then one time, one of my friends who was in car sales, he was at the store and he was just chatting with me and he was asking, how I'm doing like with the sales. I'm like, it's pretty slow. He's like, here, let me get the next customer. So this person walks in, they're like, hey, I'm looking for this, this, this. He's like, okay, it's here, it's here, it's here. She walks out with like $300 worth of supplements. I was like, how did you do that? He's like, look, she wanted a protein powder that was low in carbs and fat, that was chocolate peanut butter tasted. I showed her where it was. She wanted a pre-workout that didn't have too much caffeine into it. I showed her all the pre-workouts we have that didn't have caffeine. And she wanted a fiber supplement that wouldn't make her feel gassy. And I showed her the different fiber supplements and explained which ones would probably make her feel gassy, which wouldn't. I basically just listened to what she wanted and gave her what she wanted. And I was like, it's that easy? Like, you know, instead of like trying to overcomplicate things, just listen. So it's exactly like Matt said, you know, like if women are very vocal, she's probably going to say, hey, Trevor, I'm mad at you because of this, 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 this. So instead of, you know, trying to get defensive and no, that's not what I said, or you misunderstood me, just say, wow, you're right. I shouldn't have said that. And then where do you go from there? You know, if Steve says, hey, Trevor, I'm mad at you because we were supposed to go for dinner at 6 and you didn't show up till 6:30 and I was here waiting for half an hour, instead of, you know, going, oh, well, traffic was bad and you don't know how busy I am. And blah, blah, if I just said, you know what, you're right. I should have been on time. I'm sorry that I didn't respect your time. I won't do it again. Where do you go from there? Like the situation is completely diffused. So Steve, do you have anything to add to that?
I had three relationships prior that lasted about 2.5 years each. And what I, you know, it was on both ends. We both, you know, it wasn't a good situation. I don't have any regrets, but the reason those relationships failed on my end was I didn't listen. I had this thing in my head, you know, where she'd come home and try to vent to me. And I was just like, you know what? I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear the negativity. I don't want to hear your bitching. I don't want to hear your nagging. Or I would be like, okay, let's fix it. I'm going to fix it. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Women don't want you to fix it. Women just want someone to talk to. You're supposed to be someone really special to them, their best friend. You're their spouse. You're their, you know, everything. And you're the person they come to. As much as they have chick friends and best friends, that's all bullshit. You're really their best friend. You're really the person that knows more about them than anyone else. Okay, when something goes wrong, you're the person that's supposed to be there for them. If you can't even get that right as a guy, then you're a fucking moron.
And not just that, Steve, you're the person whose opinion she cares about the most. She cares about what all the girlfriends think, right? But what the person whose opinion she cares about the most is yours, because you're her partner.
If you ever go shopping, clothes shopping, she'll ask you, you know, hey, does this look good on me and stuff? And I'll say every time, I'm like, I have no idea. I don't know anything about clothes, but she'll still ask me anyway because she wants to know your opinion. But like the thing that I failed in those relationships is that I would not listen. Instead of trying to fix it, instead of just being like, you know, I don't want to hear it, just stand there and just be like, man, she's going to bitch to you about her day at work or about her boss or whatever. Just be like, man, that guy's a douche. Oh man, I'm sorry. You know, she just wants you to listen to her. She doesn't need you to talk back or solve what's wrong. Just fucking listen. Just nod your head, give her a hug, say, damn, I'm sorry, hon, blah, blah, blah. That's it. That's all you got to do. It's really that simple. And she'll, you know, that will work really well for her. And then just fucking plaster her, you know, that night. Just like bang the shit out of her and she'll feel better. And then everything will be good after that. So that's what you got to do as a man. Just man up and that's what you got to do. Don't roll your eyes at her because I've done that. Don't like just be like, stop, you know, I don't want to hear it. Don't bring negativity to me. Just fucking listen. Learn to listen as a man.
This is a terrible analogy. I know I'm going to get a lot of hate mail after saying this, but it's kind of like when you come home from work and your dog is so excited to see you. That dog doesn't want anything. It just wants you to sit there and pet it for like 20 minutes and just say like, yeah, I'm home. I'm here now. And that's all that dog wants. It doesn't want a cookie. It just wants you to sit there and pet it and acknowledge its existence. So it's the exact same thing. I see both Steve and Matt are laughing, but they got their mics on mute.
No, that's true. Yeah, that's.
I feel terrible saying that, but it's the best analogy I could say, I could think of. And it's completely true, you know, and nothing is like dogs have feelings. They do. Like I'm not really a pet person, but there was times when I would go visit my mom and I'd be in a rush and, you know, that dog would be so excited to see me and I wouldn't give it the time of day. Like I kind of just say like, okay, dropped it off, got to go. And the next time I saw that dog, it was almost like mad at me. It was like, what I thought we were buddies, man. You can't even take 5 minutes out of your day to come pet me and say hi. So it's kind of the same thing, you know, they just want someone to listen to. They want someone to talk to.
In case just with women, you want to pet them down there instead of patting them on the head. You pet them down there. Like, and
I hope if I get a girlfriend, I really hope she doesn't subscribe to this show or I'm going to be in so much trouble. It's been another really good episode of Evolutionary Radio. For your host, Trevor Caritzen, for my two co-hosts, Steve Snee and Matt. Matt is known on the evolutionary.org forums as Masonic Bodybuilder. This has been another episode of Evolutionary Radio. Live your life, look good doing it. Thanks for listening. Thank you.